Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Antonio Sal.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
Antonio Sal.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Antonio Sal.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. Ryan Robinson, go away. We're on the air. Winning feels good, baby. Buscelli's back. Winning feels good.
And he's not in here swinging things. And Osher's glad of that.
It's the gravy.
As he walks in a sweatshirt. Dude, it was 80 degrees today. Not in Indianapolis anymore. Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio every Wednesday night. You can join us, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351, at Tony Buscelli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice, call Logs. So, you can't hear anything. You know why? This part has to actually go under the... Talk for a second, Buscelli.
Well, we are live here as Brian plays...
Okay, that's enough.
That's enough.
Brian plays producer and engineer.
Absolutely. I'm telling Joe what to say and telling John how to plug things in.
And
hey, where do you want to start? You want to start with the defense? That's been the hot topic all week.
Let's
start with the left tackle.
How did Eugene Monroe play?
I thought he played outstanding.
Really?
Outstanding.
That's rare for you. You've been so critical all year long.
He's been fair with Eugene.
I think Eugene played great. The one sack that was Suggs got over him was not him. That's Blaine Gabbert walking into a sack. If I would have been playing left tackle, I would have screamed at him at that point saying, what in the are you doing at that point? But I thought the entire offensive line played outstanding.
Turn your daggum phone off when you come in here, Buscelli.
Will you shut up? I'll come over there and whip you.
We need a camera.
You couldn't catch me,
Joe,
you bad hip.
Joe, we need a camera in here.
You could membership. I think. Right now, you'd be stuck in that chair.
Oh, no. I'm like, you know, lightning quick.
Listen, I don't want to break this to you. You've never been lightning quick. When you were at your best, lightning quick was not how I would have described Jeff Lagerman.
You're crazy.
And Osher's not really said a word yet.
No, but I thought
I'm cat quick.
Inside joke on the offense. I thought that, in all seriousness, though, I thought the offensive line
played well.
I mean,
real strong.
Outstanding. I thought
Will Rackley had his best game.
Will Rackley played his best game.
Against maybe the toughest opponent he's faced all year. He was really good.
Really good. I thought Brad played well. Uche and Guy.
Uche, and I wanted to say this tonight, and I'm going to go ahead and get it out of the way. Uche has been the most consistent performer all year long and has been playing at a very high level.
I agree with you.
And he did the other night?
Absolutely.
And I think the left tackle, and I said all along, during the preseason, I thought he was very poor. I was very concerned. I think when he's been in the game, he's been nicked up, and that's hurt us quite a bit. We need him healthy. When he's played, I thought he's played well. I thought he was outstanding on Monday night against, again, like Jeff just said, the toughest opponent probably. Terrell Suggs can rush the passer. Terrell Suggs is a good player, and Terrell did nothing. He got the one sack that's a cheap sack. It's on the quarterback.
He got Guy Whimper a little bit.
He got Guy, but I'm talking on the left side. I thought Eugene handled his business very well. He had the Cowboy collar on. I was glad to see that. Jeff's been yelling at him for that for a while. And
Cowboy collar, by the way, is the
like
device.
A neck roll. Right. It's a neck roll.
Right.
And
helps with the stingers.
It forced him. You see his stance, Jeff? He had to get his stance was all jacked up so he could see.
Yeah, no, that's okay, though.
No, it worked.
For an offensive lineman, sometimes that's a good thing.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. It worked fine. And so I thought he played well. I thought the running game was outstanding to get it back over 100 yards against that defense. The passing game, I'm not sure where we're going with that, is unbelievable. That's the offense side of the ball.
So the perception out there, Tony, I get tons of emails every week talking about how they have to readdress left tackle.
Why?
Well, but you, as a pretty good left tackle, say that's not the case.
No, I'll say this. Eugene Monroe, and I know everyone says, you guys, you're so critical of Eugene. Well, I'm critical because I think he can be one of the best offensive tackles in football.
Right.
And he has progressed. He played poor in the preseason, but right now, that's a position we don't need to worry about. He is he great like he could be, and in my opinion, should be? No. Is he good? Yes. Out of that draft, the first rounders of that draft were
Jason Smith.
Eugene Monroe.
Michael Orr.
Andre Smith and Michael Orr.
Right.
Eugene Monroe is the best left tackle out of the group. That includes when Michael Orr played left tackle last year. And Michael Orr is a right tackle now.
He's the best tackle overall.
I would say.
Or is?
Yeah. No.
No, oh, Eugene Monroe.
Eugene. But the big key to being good is being available. You know, so Eugene has to be able to fight through this neck thing and find a way to make it. And, you know.
But overall, that hasn't been a huge issue for him.
No, yeah, it has. Yeah, it has, because he's only made 33 starts, and this is his third season.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Right.
But forget, okay, the injury thing, I agree with Jeff. We need to figure that out. But as far as a player, he's the best tackle. And I don't know how far we're going to go down this path.
Go for it.
But we talked
2 hours.
And I hear about this all the time, people killing Gene Smith. His draft picks are no good. And I yelled at my friend the other night because he said this to me. I said, you're an idiot. I said, you're an absolute. He goes, what are you talking about? I said, okay, let's go through Gene Smith's drafts. Just first rounders. Take away everything else. First rounders. Eugene Monroe, best offensive lineman in the draft. 3 years later, best tackle 3 years later, we have him. Well, you didn't have to draft a tackle. Yeah, we did. We had no we had to draft a tackle. Yeah. Next year, Tyson Alualu. A above average defensive tackle three technique when he's hurt. If he gets healthy, an exceptional three technique, playing in a 4-3, has made this with a lot of other signees, but has made this now, what are they, top five now, Jeff?
They're six.
Number six.
Sixth defense in the NFL. That is a good pick. He goes, well, why don't you draft Jason Pierre-Paul? What has he done? Besides, he plays in New York, so you hear about him more. It's not like he's a good player. He's not lighting it up.
Well, plus, you cannot do that with
going
every
back. But I'm just,
right.
I'm going back. If we want to
any
go retrospect.
Draft, you can do that.
So you got Eugene Monroe, best offensive tackle in football. You got a guy who starts every single game and plays hurt. Best tackle from that draft, not in football. Best tackle from that draft. You have a guy who plays hurt, plays through injuries, and starts every game. And is a above average while hurt potential to be great three technique. Now you have Blaine Gabbert way too early. The book is out on him. That's just first rounders. You go down the roster and Gene Smith's done a great job. This all goes back to Eugene Monroe. We don't need a left tackle. We don't need any off. You're probably going to have to get a center if Spitz can't do it, which I know that they think not Spitz, Estes,
John Estes,
John Estes, who they think he can replace Brad. That'd be the only question mark on the offensive line right now. I think it's very good. And anyone who watched that game, anyone who knows a bit about football, watch what we did to the Ravens. And even though we scored 12 points, we rushed for 100 yards on that team.
Right, and to do that shows you there's something going around the offensive line.
And Blaine Gabbert had plenty of time. He walked into sacks a couple times.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact number is. I mean, he's been sacked 18 times. You know, and I would have to think, you know, six-plus are on him. You know, so he's got to get better, and I know we got to take a break. So we'll get to the valuation of Blaine Gabbert when we come back because
– it's a big topic.
Yeah, in my mind, I mean, he took a step back in this game.
Wasn't very friendly on Monday Night Football for Blaine Gabbert.
All right, let's do it. Let's take the break. We'll come back. More to come. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, and you're listening to Jaguars Radio.
What is it?
Well, Tuesday, November the 8th, J.D. Byrider invites you to their dealership, 8864 Atlantic Boulevard, to have cookies with the Jaguars rookies. They'll be there from noon until 2. Signing autographs and sharing cookies with you. This is Jaguars This Week. Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, and me, Brian Sexton, here with you every Wednesday night. And the evaluation of Blaine Gabbert. You alluded to it before the break. Obviously, it was not his best game.
No, I thought that you know the games prior to the Pittsburgh game, he was getting better. And then Pittsburgh game, because it's such a confusing defense, I still kind of said, okay, well, even though the rating wasn't quite there, that it was better. In the Baltimore Ravens game, I don't know if he threw off of his front foot
one
time in the ball game. He left the pocket when he didn't have to. His feet were unsettled. And I think, Brian, you described it right on the money during the radio broadcast. You said jittery.
Yeah.
And if this offense wants to take the next step, you got to start seeing the steady improvement from him. And obviously some of the guys around him have to get better.
How much of that had you seen watching the tape of his other starts? A lot, a little?
Occasionally. Occasionally. But, you know, in the game prior to the Pittsburgh game, Jets?
No.
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
The Jets game, eh. Cincinnati game, feet look good. And then he goes to Pittsburgh, and you're like, whoa. You know, that was really good considering the type of pressure that he had. His feet really look good. And then all of a sudden you go against the Ravens, which really is not as confusing as the Pittsburgh Steelers in my mind. Thought he took a step back.
Scarier.
Well, I mean, up front they are. You know, they're up front, they're scarier. But, I mean, as we alluded to in the game, I mean, the corners are a weak spot for the Ravens, and there were plenty of opportunities to take advantage of those guys on the edges, and they weren't able to do that because Blaine really couldn't calm his feet down.
You know what? The best way to describe it, watching him play all the time, but even it stood out more against the Ravens, he looks like he's in a hurry to do everything. Everything looks like he's rushed.
Well, and that's, you know, that's totally typical of a young quarterback,
know, but,
and they always talk about
things
starting to slow down for him, and in this game they didn't slow down at all, you know. And
the thing that concerns,
that's got to change.
And now I'll put my offensive line hat on because it drives me crazy, is anticipating getting hit and going into sacks and walking into sacks and then anticipating contact when it's not there. And I saw some of that on the field level. I have not studied the tape, watched the tape, but sitting field level during the game on the sideline for Westwood One Monday night, boy, it's obvious. And, Jeff, I know you saw – I think you agree what you saw on the tape is it feels like and John, I'd like to hear your comments too because, I mean, you watched the best for maybe ever play the game in Peyton Manning. It feels like he is anticipating pressure when it's not there and then gets, I don't know, unsettled, nervous, antsy, and then actually goes into contact when he doesn't need to.
Well, that was the book on him coming out. I mean, if there was a criticism of him in all the draft stuff you read, is that pocket presence and throwing off his back foot was a concern. It seems like it's definitely on his mind because if he's doing it well some games and not doing well others, it's clearly something he's focusing on. But in the course of a game, it's something you can lose and sort of gets out of your mind and you're not focused on it. I just think it's clearly something that's going to have to be a major off-season focus. And, you know, you want to get better during the season, but they say guys take steps from year one to year two. Clearly that's an area that, you hear about the great players improve drastically and work on things. I don't think any question that's where he has to focus.
Yeah, Mike Shepard has got to – you know, keep working with him and keep working with him and keep working with him. And a lot of the nervousness, I think, comes, or jitteriness, whatever you want to call it, comes from not knowing,
sure.
You know. And the more he sees, the more experience he gains, that will calm down some of that. But
right.
Some of that still has to be coached and obviously learned from a footwork perspective because it just wasn't clean.
And experience. I mean, Tony, you talked about Peyton. Peyton had a reputation for happy feet. After watching him, you know, he's one of those guys, and all great quarterbacks have to have it. You have to have a pocket presence and be able to move up and avoid rush. You have to be mobile, but you have to be able to avoid it. And that's what Peyton was really good at. He saved a really bad offensive line for the last 3 or 4 years with being able to do that. You know, Blaine's obviously a long way from that, and you're not using him as a gauge. But it's just something that has to improve because I've never seen a truly great quarterback who can't handle himself in the pocket.
No, there, I don't know any.
Right.
And – someone said, and I haven't seen it, was that did the Monday Night Crew do some package on him?
I didn't see it. Jeff wouldn't have either unless you teed
it. I didn't see it.
I didn't either. I was about feeling the phantom pressure. And because I had a buddy who watched
it. I read something that Jaworski had a comment on.
Yeah,
like that.
And I had a buddy who said something about it. And you can see it, and that's what it looks like. And I go back to the sack that Suggs got over when Eugene was blocking him. Suggs was blocked. There was no pressure. There was plenty of room.
Right.
He didn't have to shuffle right at all. Just step up or not move.
Yeah, when he
didn't move, but he literally like looked like he drifted into Eugene and tried to.
When he takes his drop, you know his back foot is hitting from the shotgun 9 or 10 yards, and Tony, you know as a tackle for the quarterback that hits that back foot at 9 or 10 yards, if you're trying to protect a pocket that extends 9 or 10 yards deep. That's a long way. When that back foot hits that mark, it's got to be a shuffle back up to gain that forward momentum, to get the throw off of that front foot. and that makes it hard on offensive linemen if he's going to stay back that deep. I mean, as a I can tell you this. Having played defensive end, that's one of the first things that I looked at when I watched tape. Where's the mark? You know, and that mark is where the where's the quarterback going to be? If it was 9 or 10 yards, I couldn't wait to play against a quarterback whose mark was at 9
what
or 10 yards.
What should it be?
It should be
seven,
8.
7.
8, 8 and a half, or 8 to 7 to 6 sometimes. You know, and it can't be at 9. I mean, you just can't expect a tackle to kick that far and to be able to protect a bigger area. You know, if it's at 7.5, you know, to 5, and then sometimes it's got to come up to even, you know, 4.
You got to work.
That's
the
what it's got to be.
You got to work the pocket. The good quarterbacks work the pocket. They might, you know, typically a 5-step. If it's out of the gun 5-step, you're going to hit, you know, 10.5 step up. Under center 5-step drop, you're at 7. Take a hitch up. You throw the ball about 6 right in there. Everyone knows where you're going to be. And it's just the overall progression. And if there's any concern. And listen, it's early. It's not panic. It's not, oh, gosh, you know, he's not the guy. That's not it at all. And I think some people hear that sometimes when we make a critique or a comment that it's time to panic. Not at all. But if there's a concern, what he needs to work on is being calm, slowing it down. Not, I mean, the great quarterbacks, if you look at the great ones, whether they play today or they played a long time ago, they sit in there and they don't flinch when they throw the ball. And if they get hit, they get smoked, and and that's the thing that we all are in awe about. This thing I was in awe as an offensive lineman blocking for those guys, and you watch, and I'm like, he's stepping in and throwing the ball, and he's getting hit in the mouth as he's doing it. And that's what the great ones do, and he's going to have to learn how to do that.
Yeah. And the thing they do say about Blaine, you know, is regardless of all this, he knows what he's doing, and he sees things out there very well. They like what they're seeing in terms of his ability to read, and he's starting to be able to get in and out of some plays. But all of that aside, you still have to be able to do what we're talking about.
Yeah, and you know, there's things that you know, love about him. A competitor. Mm-hmm. He's tough. He's athletic. I mean, the throws that he makes in the seams and the outs, I mean, those things are just things that you can't coach. I mean, you can't teach that. You either have it or you don't. And he's got all the things that you want a quarterback to have that you can't teach. Now he needs to just be refined, and that's going to come.
That's the great thing. The things that we're talking about can be taught. You can work your footwork.
Or taught, as it were.
I was going to let it slide. I think most of our listeners probably knew it. OSHA's a tough customer now.
The whammy!
When you sit next to the rider, you better speak the language.
OSHA, I'll get you back.
I'll pay for that one.
You'll pay.
That's all right.
That's okay. Whatever OSHA
said. You might
want to
slide
over
a little bit further this way.
It can be taught.
It can be taught.
It can be taught.
Or teached.
And we should note that Tony doesn't do most of the teaching in his home. His wife, Angie, does.
My wife was a journalism major. She does all the grammar.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I don't do any.
I was just trying to protect you on that.
I don't really care, frankly. Whether I taught or teached, it didn't help me block one way or another.
You know, the other thing offensively
my helmet and my shoulder pads.
The other thing offensively that I didn't like, you know, I was actually wondering in the game, did Mike Thomas do something wrong last week? I mean, Mike Sims Walker, I mean, not criticizing him in any way, but he walks in the door, and I don't know how many snaps that he got, but it appeared that he took a lot of snaps away from Mike Thomas, and Mike Thomas's role as a punt returner took away from his snaps on offense. I was going, did Mike get in trouble?
And because, for the record, Mike Thomas is still the best receiver we have on the roster.
I think that's
targets.
Debatable.
Oh, yeah. I disagree.
You know, Jason Hill's a good receiver.
You know, he was a completely different guy the other night. He was running inside.
As long as you keep Jason on the perimeter, edges and outside and up the field, he's a better receiver. He's got more big play capability than Mike Thomas.
Yeah, but he had some bounce to him when he went in on those screens and even the slant.
I think Tony has something to say on that front.
Nothing.
All right.
I'm good.
It doesn't happen often, folks, so
I'm good, baby.
Enjoy it.
We got to go to break. I don't want to go over break. Joe gets very upset.
Trust me, I know.
Well, folks,
another insider.
You can help our military stay connected to loved ones when you bring a gently used cell phone to the game against the Texans November the 27th. Lots of time to plan. That's Jaguars Military Appreciation Day. You'll provide a member of our overseas military with a 60-minute phone card. We take this break. News from our friends at WOKV is next here on Jaguars Radio. Rolling right along here, Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Jeff Loggeman, Tony Buscelli, John Osher here to take your calls, questions, and comments. We were talking about Gabbert. We've got a caller who wants to as well. John is in Green Cove. Hello, John.
Hey, how's it going, guys? The thing I noticed is that, yeah, he had a bad first half, but it seemed like he did a little, you know, something that at halftime maybe, or they're talking to him. But it seemed like the second half he wasn't that bad. And I've also been, you know, under the understanding that he is like a what they call a gym rat, that he really actually gets into, you know, studying everything and getting prepared before the game. Is that true?
I mean, everything that we're hearing is that, I mean, he's got all the intangibles that you want. The work ethic, the smarts, the desire. I mean, he's got all of that, you know, and we said this, and John particularly beat that drum early on. There's got to be patience with him, you know, and it's an end of the year thing. You know, at the end of the year, do you look and say, hey, this guy is our guy, and he's showing signs of that, you know, and here we are in game seven, you know, we're breaking it down, you know, but at the same time, we're breaking it down with, look, you know, this is a long, long process for a young quarterback.
And it might even be a beginning of training camp next year in terms of getting the, you know, for a kid like this, those days and weeks of OTAs and being in the film room where you're just sitting there with the coach for, you know, 3 hours in April, I think in this case, those will be very, very important days.
Plus, he's young. 21, just turned 22.
Mm-hmm. And
didn't have a lot of reps at Missouri. And
right, played 2 years.
And played in a pure spread offense, not a lot of pro principles. No, I mean, so there's a number of things that are working against him at this time, too. Now, the good news is, and I just got a tweet asking me, are his issues coachable? Absolutely. I mean, the things, and Jeff did a great job explaining it, the things that you can't coach, toughness, smarts, arm strength, athletic ability, the things that you're either born with or you're not, he's got those. He's not just got to learn how to play quarterback in the pocket.
Yeah, the things that he doesn't have, you know, can be teached. Without question.
Whammy! Again.
It is not going to go away anytime. In fact, you know,
Joe
probably has a liner in mind, in line with that.
He would not do that to me. Joe, you wouldn't do that to me, would you?
Never.
We need to
because
say that.
I know no one ever misspeaks on the show.
Not very often. Now I'm making sure we use the Queen's English. 355 NFL
1. I was good to you when you were a writer here.
You were. You were one of the best.
And for you to do this to me, I will make you pay.
No, you will.
And I'll find a way. And it'll be painful. It'll be much worse. You'll look back on that day when you have to pay for this and say, why did I ever go to that?
Why did I do
path?
This? Yeah.
I
can see that.
I think it's the first time we've had a threat in the studio.
Well, there's going to be more of them.
Reasons to listen, folks. We've got James joining us from somewhere in Kentucky. Hello, James. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Great. Can't you tell?
Hey. I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me on the air. Out here in Kentucky. I don't get your broadcast. I actually listen to it after you guys download it. Just real quick, this is more for Tony than anything. I'm sorry, what did he say?
Nothing. No, go ahead.
I know it's kind of hard for you to judge the offensive line because of all the makeshift, but after Monday's game, how do you think it's looking? Do you see Rackley improving any? I know some of those sacks that Gabbert had taken was kind of on himself. So I just wanted your expert opinion on how the line's looking, because I know that was kind of a concern going into the season.
I thought it was the best game for all for four of the offensive linemen. I think Guy Whimper did not play his best, but he's played very well this year. And once Eben gets healthy, whether it's him or Guy playing right tackle, you have a guy. You have the other one who can be an amazing swing guy. You have six guys who really can play, especially if Will Rackley's going to play that way. He got the cast off his hand. I was concerned how he was playing the last couple of weeks. He did not look like he had much power or strength. A lot of that we thought could be attributed to the fact he had a cast. He gets that off, played outstanding football.
He's really aggressive.
Much more aggressive. Watching it on the sidelines, I continued to see him chasing people down the field and getting after people. Watching Eugene, we started the show off with that. I thought Eugene played an outstanding game against a very good player in Terrell Suggs and Jarrett Johnson when he rushed over there. And since the preseason has been over, I thought Eugene's played well. He, you know, we're worried about the injuries a little bit. But overall, I see a lot of football. I do a different game every week. This offensive line, is it elite at this point? No. Is it in the top half of offensive lines in the NFL? Absolutely.
355 NFL 1.
So you're saying Derek Cox, who went to a small school, and Will Rackley went to a small school, both played well?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't think that was possible.
And we can go on to that, too, because there's a couple like things I'm tired of hearing. I'm tired of hearing about, you know, Gene Smith draft classes have been no good. False, if you look at the facts.
We can run down the players if you'd like.
And, and the fact that everyone's mad, why don't they go draft SEC players instead of these small school guys?
Well, go down that list.
Well,
too.
The last time they did that, let's see.
Again, false.
Derek Harvey, Quentin Groves.
Can't play,
Reggie
can't
Nelson.
Play. Gave us our only touchdown against Cincinnati Bengals.
Listen, it's no guarantee.
It does, you know.
It means nothing.
It doesn't mean anything. What means is what you do once you get this level. And Derek Cox, again, eight interceptions in the first.
Really well.
But forget just last night. Eight interceptions in the first 2 years. He's been hurt this year,
that's
so
a,
yes.
That's a pace, by the way, that exceeds Rasheem's.
Yeah, and by the way, and so he...
Who went to a small school.
Went to a small school. And we need Derek Cox like we need Eugene to be healthy, and sometimes right. You can't control that as a player. I mean, it is what it is. And then if you just look at last night, or two nights ago, Rasheem Mathis and Derek Cox played as well...
Best game they've ever had.
You can't play any better. I mean, you can't. I mean, Torrey Smith can run as fast as anybody in this world, just about. And Derek Cox was stride for stride on the deep ball. You know, Rasheem Mathis, I don't know what got into him, but he was a blanket. He was like...
Him and Darryl Smith MVPs.
Unbelievable. I mean, Rasheem was outstanding.
Just on the small school thing, have you turned on NFL Network and not seen Terrell Owens, by the way, in the last 48 hours?
No.
Am I getting that?
It's a ridiculous argument. But
Tennessee,
you hear
Chattanooga.
And I've gotten no emails about it this week.
Did Marcus Ware any good?
Yeah, Troy. Right.
I wouldn't want him.
No, he's terrible.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab another call. We've got Scott, who joins us from Mandarin, with a topic that we rarely touch on this program. Hello, Scott.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Hey, the comment or questions I had is, after this game and the previous game that Scobie kicked three field goals from 50, and then you got...
That never happened before, by the way. He'd never kicked three field goals of 50 yards or greater in the same game.
That's a record.
Well, okay,
that ties an NFL record.
Right, and then you know, Janikowski doing the same thing, I think, that one game for Oakland. Is this going to change the perception maybe that general managers and players and coaches have towards kickers? I mean, we wasted five or six games this season trying to find a punter. We finally got one that can punt better than 10 yards. And we had one last year we didn't want to pay. We got rid of. We kind of wish we hadn't, I think, at this point. And when a lot of these tight games come down to it, after all, the big guys have done all the things, no insult intended, but they rely on that little kicker.
Well, you got to remember one thing, Scott. I mean, it's not like they didn't try to re-sign Adam Polish. I mean, they offered Adam Polish top five money when it comes to punters.
I think he wanted to go.
I mean, he got a little bit more guaranteed money, and poof, he's gone. You know, and, you know, Matt Turk had done really nice things other places he's been. But you know what? The guy that they have now, Nick Harris, is doing a tremendous job.
Doing a great job.
If you look at his numbers and compare them with other punters in the National Football League, and he doesn't have enough punts to qualify. But if he had enough punts to qualify, he would be the 10th ranked punter in the National Football League in net average. That's
right.
Tremendous. You know, so they understand the importance of kickers and punters. Trust me, they know that.
But you're not going to see a change in philosophy on what you pay them or their importance
or
in the draft.
Drafting
like
them, no.
And here's why. In all due respect to Nick Harris, where was Nick Harris?
Right.
I mean, and not that there's a – but there's a handful.
Well, look at Houston Texans punter, undrafted.
Yeah, there's a – and there's a handful of guys, if someone gets hurt, that can punt and do a average job. And so you're not going to spend a lot of money or
because
graphics,
confidence with a kicker,
it can come and go,
is a huge thing.
Now, place kicker, I have a little
That's the one position that you almost don't want to have any guaranteed money for.
Well, but place kicker, I have a little place kicker, I have a little bit different. I have a little bit different theory because those are wins and losses. I mean, now there's only a handful of guys I treat that way. Scobie's one of them. When you can consistently kick the ball and make field goals past 50 yards, you become a difference maker at the end of football games.
Yeah, he's having a season that
Sebastian Janikowski is another guy.
If he continues, it is a special, memorable season. Yeah. I mean, which is not always the case, you know, or rarely the case for a kicker.
Well, let's not jinx him.
Yeah, sure, last year he started with 14 in a row too.
Well, I'm not even talking about the numbers in a row. I'm talking about the fact that you have that kind of leg strength.
Hey,
you give yourself an opportunity at the end of the game in close games to shorten that field. And it's a magnificent weapon.
Well,
yeah,
to make that kick, because if he misses that kick, it's a very short field,
and
they probably lose that game if he misses that kick.
Yeah, yeah. They only have 30 yards, 15, 20. I mean, 20, 25 yards to go, and they win.
It was at the 42. Yeah. And you take over right there from the hole.
Now that guy missed a 52-yard kick.
Okay,
badly.
But if you get to the 30,
but the point is that
48-yarder, which is very makeable.
You know what was impressive though was that I went back and watched the tape, and I watched everything from field goals, extra points, kickoff. I mean, every single snap that happens on the field. If you watch how Josh swings his leg on those 50 yarders, then you compared it to the guy for the Baltimore Ravens of how he swung his leg. Josh acted like he was just hitting a 7-iron. You know, Pat Leahy, who I played with in New York Jets kicker for a long time, used to compare kicking to a golf swing. Mm-hmm. And he'd always have to downsize the club for the longer the distance. But I swear to you, the way Josh swings on his 50 yarders, he doesn't put anything extra into it.
Yeah, the better ones usually say that they kick it the same way, extra point. You know, on a long one, they might, have to have it start off lower, but that the leg speed, shouldn't change.
But he got, the elevation that he got on, it was just effortless.
That 154 would have been good from 64.
No doubt. No doubt. That 54-yarder would have been right at the crossbar at 64.
And that would have been an NFL.
Because it was in the net.
It was a big-time kick.
The first one didn't hit the net. The second 54-yarder hit the net.
Going to the kicking game, how do we end up with 12 guys on the field at the end of the game, and what is the actual rule on that?
I
don't know the rule.
On the kickoff,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that John Harbaugh was going bananas.
Yeah, because we had 12 guys in the field, and Scobie was smart enough not to kick it and ran by it. I was like,
game, right?
Yeah, I don't know the rule.
Right. I guess the fact that he knew not to kick it means there's no play, so you just take him off the field. I guess.
I'm just glad he can count.
He is a kicker. 355 NFL 1.
I don't know how you get 12 guys on a kickoff.
Guys are anxious.
Guys are fighting to
get out
there.
Part of the win.
That's right, baby.
Time to break. We'll be back. More Jaguars this week after this on Jaguars Radio. All right, here we go. Jaguars, Texans. 1 o'clock kickoff. Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue tailgate show begins at 10. Set a pregame show at noon. Kickoff at 1. The Aetna Big Halftime Show, the Winn-Dixie Postgame Show, and the Southern Ford Dealers Scoreboard Show. Count on it here on Jaguars Radio. We've got plenty of callers about the Jaguars D. We've touched on that. I've got some tweets about the Jaguars D. We'll get to that. Let's start, though, with Clay in St. Augustine, who's been holding for a time. Hello, Clay. Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Listen, I want to say thanks. Longtime Jaguars fan. I want to say thanks to Tony. He signed my son's Tony Vasile jersey the day that he was put up in the Pride, and I appreciate that. I think that the shocking, surprising play of Rasheem Mathis, I was on that side when they started the first drive and he made a couple of those shutdown plays, him and Derek Cox. I think this surprising play of the defensive backfield, I think, set the tone for the whole team on defense, the whole game, and I'm just amazingly proud of the job that they did, which is in complete contrast to how they've been playing over the last couple of years. That Rasheem Mathis especially, he was on his game, and I was blown away by it.
Yeah, and I want to add to that. A lot of people, Rasheem over the last couple of years hasn't been the Rasheem of old. He's been dealing with injuries, whatever. But Rasheen's play all year long has been very good.
Yeah, it wasn't just this. It was outstanding now, but it's been good all year.
Monday night was lights
like
out.
Pro Bowl.
One of the best performances I've ever seen Rasheen have. And the play that he made that I showed on All Access last night, where he made the play on the on the quick screen to Torrey Smith, and he beat the block of Anquan Boldin, and then on the deep throw that they were trying to sucker to fake the little quick screen and then throw the ball deep, and then Dwight Lowry ended up getting the sack because of Rasheen's coverage was right on the money.
You know, it's funny you say that. I was right there on the Raven sideline. I was doing sideline for Westwood One. I was sitting.
That's a plug right there too.
Plug. I walk around, so I happened to be right there at the first down marker for that play, and I saw the fake, and I go, uh-oh, because I saw the wheel route coming, and I thought, oh, gosh, we're in trouble. But Rasheen did not even bite for a second, read it perfectly, and was stride for stride.
Perfect.
It was a perfect play. I mean,
they
perfect
have a,
coverage.
They have a grading scale that defense uses. You know, you got the good things, you know, big plays, you know, sacks, caused fumbles, recovered fumbles, and then the bad plays, you know, the loafs, the missed assignments, and they have a category called eye violations. And if Rasheen's eyes are in violation, in other words,
touchdown.
If he's looking at Ray Rice thinking that that's going to be the quick screen,
touchdown.
That's a touchdown to Anquan Boldin. So very disciplined eyes by Rasheen. You know, when you've got a guy to cover, you cover that guy, and you don't cheat trying to make a play somewhere else that you're not even supposed to be involved in. That was a big-time play by Rasheen. And Derek Cox, wow. I mean, Derek Cox.
I didn't know he was that fast.
Wow. Step for step with Torrey Smith down the field.
Golly.
Small school guy, right?
Tremendous.
He went where again?
Tribe.
Didn't he go to an SEC school?
Tribe.
And they're not in the SEC, right?
Oh, I thought they got invited to join.
They're one of those teams that are getting invited.
Them
in Missouri?
It's a roundabout plug for the Ozone. 355 at Jaguars.com.
Mike Tomlin, Tribe. By the way, if you didn't know, Mike Tomlin, Tribe.
Okay.
Mike Jennings, Tribe. You guys know who Mike Jennings is. He's a proud alum of the Parkview High School Patriot clan.
Guess what?
One of my old high school teammates that played at William & Mary.
And guess what else?
The fine institution. By the way, it's
no one else
great
cares.
Academic institution.
It is great.
10 times better than SC. Just making a point.
Teach. 355 NFL. Nobody. Hey, look, you better not be sensitive in this
I'm
studio.
Fine.
No, I'm just saying.
I'm good, baby.
All right, here we go.
I'll take my shots when they come.
Yeah, I know that you will. Everyone here does. Jay is in it. By the way, Joe, before we pull Jay on, could you give me a button with the cash register sound? Because every time there's a plug, I'll just hit that. No one has to say that was a plug. That was a plug. That was a plug. Yeah. He didn't like it. Okay, Jay, here you go. What's going on, Jay?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Hey, to John real quick, your old stomping grounds in Indianapolis, I think you're doing awesome. You know, I'm filling in for Rick, as other people want to call him. But real quick on the defense, we know that we've had injuries, and we know that they've played pretty good so far. But, wow, like you guys said, did anyone see that coming? Is that something that they can build on going forward to the season, or is that kind of a rare performance by – the defense, or was it more the Ravens offense?
We're going to find a lot out this week.
Well, wait a second now. Is that a rarity? They've been doing that all year. Now, not to the level of only 174 yards, but the first three opponents didn't get over 300. This was the eighth rated defense in the NFL. They held the New Orleans Saints, I think, their season low in points. I mean, it's not like this defense has been terrible and showed up one night.
No, they've been good.
They've had a couple of games, Pittsburgh first half, New Orleans, the whole game, they gave up a lot of yards. But in the NFL these days, even a great defense is going to have some halves where they get gashed.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just how it is. And the really good defenses are the ones that do what you did against Pittsburgh, which is
adjust,
not get gashed the whole game. Or against New Orleans even, where you're giving up tons of yards, but you figure out a way to stay in it. You are not going to hold 16 teams to 200 yards of offense. It's just – the way the league's set up right now, that will not happen.
But this week is a challenge.
Sure.
I mean, this is a big time challenge. You know, along the lines of New Orleans, it's short week. You got to buy the following week, and you've got a team that's got incredible balance. And I said this to Brian earlier. I think Gary Kubiak is the brightest offensive mind in football.
And Aaron,
and I don't even think that it's that
really?
Close. I think he's
crazy.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this team called the Green Bay Packers? I mean, all they do is put up 50. a game. Sean Payton, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean,
McCarthy. I mean, those two guys have a little better resume than Gary Kubiak.
But if you look,
Super Bowls, leading off offense of the NFL.
But if you look at who they have quarterbacking, you know, they've got a Drew Brees, they've got an Aaron Rodgers. You know, I'm not trying to slight my Virginia alum, Matt Schaub, but trust me, he's not in that category.
I'm not saying he is, but you cannot.
And to get the productivity out of every offensive weapon that Gary Kubiak gets, he's one of the best.
All right, we have got to talk about news at this point. When we come back, we'll talk about the Texans, the impact of winning on Monday, and what it means for the game on Sunday, all that and more, and your calls. So if you're with us, hang on. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio.
Yep.
Well, when you're looking for department store style and discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville location, Stein Mart. More fashion, less price. All right, so here's the interesting storyline that we kind of touched on before we went to Pittsburgh, and that is if you win a ball game, you're not that far out of the chase in the AFC South. You're only 2 games back, and now you go there, and this is the argument. This is the rationale that folks want to throw at you. So we'll just throw it, Vaselli. And that is that you go beat the Texans on Sunday. You're a game back heading into your bye week with
Cleveland and Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Very easily. You win this game, and
you could be looking.
Dare we say.
It's a little aggressive considering the offense is, you know, averaging 12 points.
I was asked that on a radio interview today. I actually didn't for in Houston. And they asked me about that. You know, what do you think? And I said, listen, the optimist in me says that if we win this week, we're a game back, and it's anyone's race going down the second half of the year.
Right.
The realist tells me, though, you have to score more than 11 points a game if you want to have and more than 6 touchdowns in 7 games.
And the Texans' schedule's pretty favorable for them.
But I don't care who it is, Texans. The Indianapolis Colts, by the way. You got to score more than 11 points to beat them.
Well, they're scoring 12.
Okay.
Yeah, they're going 12.
Okay, 12. I apologize. Score more than 12.
But I think the big thing is when you're 2-5. Go ahead,
Tony. No, I was done. Go ahead.
When you're 2-5,
you're so articulate. Yeah, flow so well. I don't want to interrupt. Go ahead.
When you're 2-5 and you've lost 5 straight before a win, you've got to get a couple before you can sit there and realistically talk about
you're
the
right.
division.
And
yes, if they get a couple over Baltimore and Tennessee, who are two. I mean, I'm sorry,
Houston,
who are two of the better teams in the AFC. Then it's a trend.
John, do you really think that Houston's one of the better teams in the AFC, though?
Leading the division.
No. Okay, but so was the Seattle Seahawks one of the better teams in the NFC last year?
One in the playoffs.
Okay, let me ask you the question again. Were the Seattle Seahawks one of the better teams going in at the end of the season before the playoffs started? Would you have said, this is one of the best teams in the NFC?
So they got hot.
Okay. They're better than somebody.
Let me ask you one more time. Do you think the Texans are one of the best teams in the AFC? I don't.
I think they're in the, you know, in the top 12 or 14 teams in the league, I would say.
Yeah. Fair.
And I don't think you would think that the Jaguars are.
No.
Right now.
No, I'm not saying that, but if you have a conversation about
it would be a couple
the,
of victories over legitimate teams, I should
fair
say.
Fair enough.
You know,
I guess when I think of a teams that the best teams, which I would say are the teams you talk about having a chance to go to the Super Bowl this year, the Texans would not be one of those teams at this point.
That's probably fair.
They wouldn't be. I wouldn't if I was having a conversation.
Are the Ravens?
Yeah, I would talk about the Ravens.
Right, I would too.
I talk about the Ravens. I talk about the Patriots. You talk about the Chargers that way. You probably talk about the Steelers because of their track record and their history. You talk about, you know, the Saints, you talk about the Packers, you talk about somebody from the East, you know, Cowboys, Giants type of teams, 49ers, you talk about that way. But I wouldn't include the Texans. I think they're middle of the pack. You know, yes, the favorite in the AFC South, get in the playoffs and lose round one.
Is your opinion changed if Mario Williams is healthy and Andre Johnson doesn't have hamstring surgery?
Probably not.
Do you still see them about?
And I said this at the beginning of the year when they blew out whoever they opened the Colts and they beat the Steelers, the Texans. And by the way, Bob McNair, their owner, is one of my favorite people in the world. I mean, no classier individual. I still have friends in that organization. But until they do it, because this is a team we've talked about as being the sexy pick for about 4 years.
Well, you know, the last 2 years they started 4-2 in 2009, and they lost four in a row in November. Last year they start 4-3, and they skid and lose eight.
They were 3-1 at one point.
Yeah, I mean, they just went downhill.
And so until they do it, I'm not a believer.
But this is a big game. It's Battle Red Day.
Battle Red Day.
Well, I heard they might not do it now. I heard.
Oh no, it's
oh,
they're doing
official?
It. No, it's Battle Red Day.
Woo, that scares me.
You know.
It's in their media
guide. Terrence Knighton had a nice quote on that today. He said, you know, Bulls charge it red. So, I mean, they're laying down the line a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of amazing. I mean, the Texans, you know, don't have a winning record in their franchise history, but they're even against the Jaguars. They have had 12 Battle Red Days in their history. Six of them have been against the Jaguars, and they're 4-2 in those six games wearing Battle Red.
And that means
you don't just
walk
in on Battle Red.
What does that mean for Sunday?
That means you better strap on everything a little tighter because they're wearing Battle Red.
I mean, as a player, now as a fan, as someone in the media, I think that's just a bunch of hooey. I don't think it means anything.
But it's in their media guide.
I know it's in their media guide. But you and I both know, Jeff, as we read these media guides every week and the releases from different teams.
Except for Ryan Robinson. Fine release.
The only thing you find
out. Best in the league.
He is the best in the league.
Hardest working man in the business.
Without a doubt. But all you really usually find out in the release is what good has happened in the franchise. I remember the Colts when they were 0-16. You would read that release, and you would think somehow this team had a chance to go to the playoffs.
There's one team, though. Who is it, Brian? There's one team that, I mean, just lays it out there. And it just they don't care.
I haven't seen them either.
I'm trying to think of which one it is. The good and bad.
You know, release?
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
And I'm trying to think of which team it is. John?
Well, as we ponder that, let's talk about it. Let's think about another.
No, the Raiders is the worst.
Oh, terrible.
No.
Press release in the National Football League.
It used to be.
I saw the worst one this week. By far, not close to anyone else.
Who?
The Atlanta Falcons. Holy cow. You talk about, I was done reading it. 53 seconds. And gathered was no better for
it. We see it in December. It's not good.
It's like unreal. There's nothing in there.
There is somebody. And is it Green Bay with their dope sheet?
It is Green Bay.
Yep.
Good and bad.
Yep, absolutely. They tell you everything that's going on. That's what happens when you've got 90 years of history behind you.
Mm-hmm.
A couple Super Bowls, you don't care. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Mary's in Mandarin with a thought on Battle Red.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Whether it's Battle Red Day or not, the Jags are going to take them.
That's right.
Everything might be big in Texas, but not this game. Sorry. This is our game. And, Tony, you know this is our time. It's go time.
It is go time.
That's it. It's teal all the way. Sorry, Texas. And that's probably all I have to say, but I am so excited.
Mary, I agree with you 100%.
Thank you, Mayor Tony Baselli.
Mayor.
Wow.
Okay. Now we're getting a little thick in this.
I like the respect I'm showing. I'm not showing any respect in the studio, so Mary, you can call anytime you like.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, he might even teach you something. 355-NFL, 1-800-355.
Well, I think that would be the proper.
Yes, no, I know. I know. It was. I know. It was.
You have to say, he probably would even taught you something. You have to mess it up to be appropriate.
I have trouble with that. Here we go.
Well, I know you are another. You went to the Ivy League of the Midwest or wherever Kansas is.
Yeah. I don't have a degree in English, though.
Really?
No.
No.
I don't.
What in?
Journalism.
No.
Where they teach you not to use the word teach.
Oh, brother. Here we are. You know what? Let's take a break.
I'm probably smart at this point.
Yeah, right. There's no time to establish a new topic. When we come back, we'll talk about something. You're listening to Jaguars Radio. Rolling right along here. Jaguars This Week on Jaguars Radio. Tony Buscelli, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, Joe
Ozone.
Fortunato. Another plug right there. We make it happen every single way.
Ozone.
Exactly what we're looking for. So here you go. This one says, is there, in your opinion, a better pair of linebackers on one team than Darryl Smith and Paul Posluszny?
Better?
Good question.
You got to think through it. They're as good as anybody. They're playing as well as anybody else in the NFL right now. I mean, if you looked at the Ravens, Terrell Suggs technically is an outside linebacker, and him and Ray Lewis is a pretty good combination.
Yeah, it's hard to compare because, I mean,
it depends if you're talking 3-4 or
4-3. Yeah, 3-4, 4-3, what are they asked to do?
You know, Clay Matthews in that group is pretty good. You know, when James Harrison and Woodley and Lawrence Timmons, those three together, pretty dang good. You know, but listen.
Yeah, how about the guy in San Francisco's Patrick Willis?
Patrick Willis, probably the best middle linebacker.
And then they got that young guy too, right?
Yeah, and I can't think
young outside backer.
Well, they have Alden Smith, who's the rookie.
Alden Smith
is a beast. And they have a good inside.
And then
guy.
They got Paris Harrelson.
Paris doesn't play. Alden Smith took his position.
Ah, and Paris Harrelson.
At least the game I saw. I only saw one game.
Yeah,
it was all Alden Smith in the 55. Whatever.
Yeah, but there's another.
They're
guy.
Very, very good.
So, but it's but to answer the question. Darryl Smith and Paul Posluszny, maybe the best 4-3 linebacking tandem you could. And I'm drawing a blank, but they're as good as, you know, they're good. They're great. They're playing. Paul Posluszny is playing at a Pro Bowl level. Darryl Smith has played at a Pro Bowl level for probably about 3 or 4 years and gets no credit because of, you know, being in Jacksonville and being on a team that was average. Them together, you're not going to do much better.
No, it's fun. It's fun watching.
I mean, maybe get a better pass rusher in the 3-4. Some of those guys we talked about, but as far as pure linebacking play,
right? And it's a different position. I mean, you know, you guys know better than I do. It's a different position. 4-3 linebacker, 3-4 linebacker,
totally different.
Two different deals. So as 4-3 linebackers, maybe the best.
As an outside backer in a 4-3, Darryl Smith is really, really good.
Oh, he can cover, he can blitz, he tackles. He's.
Does he ever miss a tackle?
I haven't seen it.
Right, he's not a sack guy, so people, you know,
but
fans.
But he had a great sack against beating Ray Rice. What a great move
but,
that was.
But, you know, sometimes people discount the outside linebacker doesn't get sacks because you do different things. But he's very, very good.
Yeah, that's the big difference between Ray Rice and Maurice Jones-Drew.
Right.
Ray Rice gave up the sack to Mincy. Ray Rice gave up the sack to Darryl Smith. If that's Maurice Jones-Drew, you think he gives them up? Ain't no way. No
Ray
way.
Rice, did you see him sprint off the field? I don't know whether you had started downstairs or not, but after the game,
he wasn't happy.
He sprinted off the field. You would have thought after
13
all the talk.
Touches.
Yeah, you would have thought after all the talk, though, he might have hung around to say hello to Maurice, congratulate him on his day. Uh-uh.
And there was a little criticism from the players and the Ravens after the game for not using
Terrell Suggs.
Yeah. Terrell Suggs came out and criticized Cam Cameron.
And what it's worth.
Good. I'm glad. That means we did our job as a team.
But isn't it remarkable that after last season being 28th, we're sitting here talking about two Jaguars linebackers being maybe the best in the NFL, the defensive tackles, the secondary. I mean,
Gene Smith does not know what he's doing.
Well,
seriously.
And that's the thing. As I've talked about a couple
honestly,
times.
Honestly, I mean, how do you go from 28th to 6th? Maybe we should get rid of
it's easy to botch free agency trying to do what he did.
Very easy.
It's usually, I mean, not only easy, it's usually botched trying to do what they did. And a lot of times it sets franchises back a long way trying to do what they did. And he, you know, I don't think he gets enough credit for that, Frank.
Boy, and
Gene Smith gets enough credit. How about the fact that why does he get so much criticism? I mean, he gets killed lately.
How about Dwight Lowry?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the late addition of Dwight Lowry for nothing.
Right.
I mean, seriously, and I'm not saying you can't criticize Gene Smith. I mean, that's part of the deal. And you have to, you know, and some of the things he's done the last couple of years, the proof is still. We have to see and how the draft picks work out. But if you took the sample size from the day he was hired to have the keys to the kingdom as far as personnel to today, he's done an A-.
There are significantly fewer things that have to be fixed now than 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean,
no doubt.
A-, maybe?
And isn't that what you're asking for?
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe. I mean, he's been outstanding. They went in to fix the defense this offseason. They were going to fix the defense. We have we're a pass rusher away from probably being a top three or consistently top five defense, let's put it that way. And with all that said, they rushed past a pretty good Monday night. They got after the quarterback.
Yeah, but you
still need that one guy.
You know, I was talking about this last night in that, you know, even though this defense has, you know, number 6 ranking, they've got areas and individuals that can improve to make them even better.
Sure.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if Aaron Kampman comes along, if Tyson Alualu can somehow kind of get that healthy, you know, area of the knee worked out, Terrence Knighton can play better. Terrence Knighton the last two games has just been good. Not great.
But, Jeff, isn't that
– he's been okay.
Isn't that just a want to?
if Terrence Knighton had the focus to where, I mean, to bring it every play.
He's so dominant when he does.
He would just kill people. I mean, just kill them.
What is that, you think?
I mean, I don't know. Whatever. But in the last two games, he's just been okay. And we're talking about two games in which, you know, the last six quarters you've given up, what, a little over 200 yards. And their nose tackle's been okay. Can you imagine what they could be if he is dominant like he can be at times?
We're not asking him to do something he's capable of doing.
And Clint Session. Clint Session, really, I thought, showed his best game of the year.
Played very well.
And
he's the kind of guy who'll get more comfortable with what he's doing.
And absolutely. Can you imagine how much better they can be when he really hits his groove?
Right. He's going to run around. He's going to make big hits, make a mistake once in a while. But he's going to make up for it by, you know, well, once every two games, making a play that changes things.
You need Derek Cox to stay healthy. He is, gosh, the difference he makes when he's in there is so evident.
I just think that, I mean, even though they're that good, I mean, you still see potential for more. And like Tony was saying, you put a big-time pass rusher out there, and if that big-time pass rusher can be the Aaron Campman of old, or, you know, Aaron Campman and another guy next year.
Holy cow.
Oh, my.
Is there any chance that Aaron Campman, second half of the season?
I thought he was better. I thought he was better this past game. It still wasn't productive, but it was better. He moved a little bit better. And that's what you want to see. You just want to keep seeing the improvement week in and week out.
And you want him to get to the point where the offense has to think about him, so that it opens up things for other guys, too.
Yeah, and they're not doing that.
Right, not yet.
We're not close. Yeah, no, that's where you want to get. You're exactly right.
Even if he doesn't get sacks, you want him to have to
– game plan.
Yeah, you want him to be a factor.
Slide to him, chip him, do something.
Which they have to – I mean, even if Terrence is not playing at a high level every play, as you guys say, the other team has to worry about the defensive tackles, and they have to account for him.
Well, it would seem to be a good week for them to be on this team, because you're going to get all the Arian Foster and Ben Tate you can handle.
They're going to run that zone scheme, and they're going to cut back, and you got to be –
they're good at it. That offensive line's good.
Aaron Campman said something really interesting about that today, too. You know, the Ravens, I guess, try to run something fairly similar to what, the Texans do.
They're not athletic up front.
Right. But he said the thing about the Texans is they've got a lot of guys in that system who have been doing that system for a long time, and it's the old Denver system.
They're going to cut you.
Takes a while to get down, but he said they've got a lot of guys who do it well, and it makes them a significantly harder task than the Ravens.
We better play good gap integrity on the backside this week.
Yeah, otherwise
you'll be,
Tennessee did not.
They'll go out the gate the backside, and they're going to cut the three technique on the backside.
Everybody's talking about how Tennessee quit. No, Tennessee just didn't stay in their gap.
Yeah, you got to stay in your gap. The backside. This is where Darryl Smith's going to be critical. Weak side, offside backer sitting back there and waiting for that cutback.
This is great.
Arian Foster, is going to cut back.
It's a great test for Terrence Knighton this week.
Because he could, now this is the
Myers
game.
Is a good center.
He is a good center, but this is the type of game where we need Terrence Knighton to wake up in a bad mood and say, "I'm going to go
see red.
To kill Myers, because he is a nose guard. Can be so disruptive in the zone scheme, it messes everything up. It screws up the cutback lanes. It screws up the running back's read. I mean, it really can make it difficult. So you talk about needing him to play at the elite level that he has the ability. This would be the week to do it.
But with it being Battle Red Day, I'm just not sure we even need to go down there.
Maybe we should stay home. Battle Red, I'm nervous. I'm not even going. I don't know how you guys get on the plane. I'm nervous, and I'll be in Baltimore a long way away. The fact that you guys are going to walk into that stadium, Reliant Stadium, it's still called Reliant, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Reliant Stadium on Battle Red Day, you guys better pack your lunch. You guys are in trouble.
Well, I'm not going to need lunch because I'm going to eat at Fogo de Chao Saturday night.
Have you had that carnage?
I've been to Fogo de Chao many times. Many times. I'm not as big a fan as Jeff is. I enjoy it, but he gets all excited. I mean, we're at Wednesday, and he's getting excited about Saturday night.
You remember there's one in Atlanta also?
Oh, I know. And there's also one in Indy.
I'm from Kansas. We eat red meat. That's a lot of red meat now.
It's a restaurant in Houston we go to every year. Love it.
They're all over the country.
Oh, I know. And for folks who are going, what is Fogo de Chao?
It's a Brazilian steakhouse where they bring meat around until you flip the – you have a little
chip. Yeah, got a coaster.
It's a green-red coaster, and when it's green, they just
bring
keep
the
on
meat.
Bringing meat, and when it's
red,
they stop.
Give me a break.
And there's a, and it has a massive salad bar.
Mm-hmm.
And these little biscuits or something.
Don't eat them. That's wasting space.
I understand.
It's all about the meat.
I get that part. But they are tasty.
Well, that's because you're a pig.
Oh, I'm a pig. I'm not the one talking about Fogo de Chao on Wednesday night.
Well, hey, man, you were just sitting there describing all the food there.
I understand that. I've been there. I understand it. But I'm not the one drooling at this
Where
point.
Where were we at when he ate like a pig?
Anchor Bar in Buffalo.
Anchor Bar in Buffalo.
Oh, listen.
And then you go back the next day. You're a pig, Vaselli.
I didn't go back,
back the next day.
You went to the other place.
The other place because they said it was good. Wait a second. Just so for the record.
Get it on the record.
You are unbiased. You were there?
Yeah, I was there.
Who matched me wing for wing, pizza for pizza, sandwich for sandwich, cheesecake for cheesecake?
No, nobody.
Right there.
See, unbiased, nobody.
He had pizza.
I don't remember him eating
yes,
pizza.
Yes, Jeff, did you have pizza? Don't lie.
I had like one piece and you had half of a pie.
You're the one who ordered an extra one.
Boy, it sounds like we need a rematch.
I'm up for that.
He didn't even blink.
Your unbiased opinion just told you the truth. You're a pig.
He didn't say I'm a pig.
Oh, this show is fun. Folks, we will take a break for news and come back. More Bocelli, more Lagerman. Will we get more Osh?
Come on, Ozone.
Why not? News, though, is next. All right, rolling right along here. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. I'm surprised we haven't got any Tebow calls tonight. Figured there was at least one of them out there.
For what?
For winning.
Well, they won.
Quite a few Tebow emails in the Ozone. Thank you.
We'll get him used to it.
By the way, the Ozone that you did on Monday night, Jaguars All Access.
Yeah.
That was very nice.
Well, thank you.
That was your best one yet.
I appreciate it.
I didn't see it.
It wasn't worth seeing.
Well, good. I won't tune in then.
All right, enough. Let's move on.
Okay, where do you want to go, John? We're going to let you dictate the action.
Yeah, you're lead us. Great one.
I got nothing.
Come on.
You're a pro.
I'm still basking in the glory of my Lagerman praise.
Ryan Robinson was looking for some of that heavy earlier.
God, he ain't ever going to get it from me. Of course, I gave it to him earlier tonight.
Right. No, you did.
What about, I got a topic we can talk about. Anyone surprised that Maurice was laying the ball on the carpet as much as he was?
Maurice was.
That's what I just said.
No, Maurice was surprised.
Oh, so Maurice was surprised. I mean, I was caught off guard.
Well, I figured part of it was the Ravens. I mean, that's what they do. They force 3 turnovers a game.
Well, the one was not a good handoff either, correct?
No, that was on Blaine.
Okay.
But, I mean, there was the first series of the game, the pass, was a clear fumble. The one at the one-yard line, good hit by Ed Reed, but a fumble. And almost a fumble that they ruled his knee was down. I mean, you just don't see Maurice letting the ball loose.
No.
I mean, I was surprised. I don't know. I mean, what did Maurice have to say about it as you talked to him?
Not really much. I think, you know, one of those games.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there was, there's really a trend or a reason. It was just kind of, I think.
And I bring that up because it was a topic on our national radio broadcast. They were talking about it because they were surprised.
Well, sure.
And seeing the ball on the ground that much from him.
If it was a younger back, I think you'd be concerned with him. I think his body of work suggests that it shouldn't happen again.
Anomaly.
I mean, you would think.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine this offense without him?
I'd rather not. I'd rather not. Because he is. Did you see the early – you saw it. But being down on the field, he broke off tackle right. It was down towards the south end zone where the terrace
would be. That would be south.
Well, whatever. I'm describing the stadium. When Ladarius Webb tried to come up and tackle him, and he
just trucked him.
Not only trucked him, but it looked like he was like trying to seek him out. I mean, here comes Ladarius, and you think most backs start running the other way. Not Maurice. He goes right at him, whack.
But
Ladarius falls to the ground, and Maurice keeps going.
Yeah, but did you see the reaction of Ladarius Webb? I mean, he just handled it perfectly. He got up and complained that he was being held.
Right. Oh, sure. Why wouldn't you?
He got tattooed. It was interesting talking to Chuck Pagano before the game, the defense coordinator for the Ravens. And they were concerned as a staff. I was surprised. Now, all coaches are a little bit, but I've known Chuck for a while, and he's pretty honest with me. He said, listen, this is, just looking at their offense, Maurice Jones-Drew's a guy we are fully aware of. And I thought he gave him a great compliment because you know how they feel about their organization. Mm-hmm. He says he plays football and runs the ball like a Raven. Now, this is a defensive coordinator at the Ravens where they take a lot of pride and toughness and physical and being that type of football player. They, Maurice Jones-Drew, maybe you don't hear about him as much nationally, but he is well-respected, and every defensive coach that plays this team knows how dangerous he is.
Well, I thought it was really significant that at the end of that game, we've all seen teams play the Ravens that just don't try to run. And then you've seen teams play the Ravens that stop trying to run at halftime. And the Jaguars, as you said about the offensive line, kept running, kept
great
running.
Great job.
And by the end of that game,
they
were getting pushed. And you usually don't see teams get pushed, especially late on the – it usually takes too long to have that happen that you usually don't see it.
And two things that go into that. One, the defense played great. It gives you the ability to do that. And two, even a greater accomplishment when you figure out that the Ravens weren't worried about the passing game because our quarterback and our receivers could get nothing going. So it's that much more difficult.
Right. How was Greg Jones?
Pretty good.
There were a couple of plays I saw where he moved Ray.
He had one block on Ray Lewis where he just lifted him up. Couple good stalemate blocks with Jarrett Johnson. I mean, he was good. But that's a tough physical group that you're going to see Greg Jones just annihilate
anybody. No.
You're just not going to see it.
Sometimes a stalemate there is a win.
Yeah. Hold him off.
Well, I know I saw that one play up the middle where Ray Lewis went backwards.
I thought that was impressive, and I think, I get a lot of emails about, as I said, about how bad the offensive line is supposedly playing. And all year to be able to you have to credit him for being able to, what a run block as well. That has to count. That even though there's some sacks being allowed, that the way they're run blocking, to me means they're doing something right, a lot right.
They're playing better. They played better. They've had some rough spots during the year, obviously, but they're playing winning football. They played winning football.
My prediction before the game, the pitch count goes out the window, was right on.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see how Maurice – kind of comes back on a short week after having a 30-carry game.
Most carries by a running back in the NFL through 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And Maurice got some criticism this week, in the stuff that I see for the fumbles. But I think it's important to realize that without Maurice Jones-Drew, there's no way you win that game.
No.
In terms of keeping the Ravens off the field for long enough. As much as you want to criticize him for the fumbles, I thought that was one of the best games I've seen him play. I've only seen a few this year, obviously, but that was impressive
stuff. And give credit, somewhat to the coaches for
sticking with him.
Right back to him. Whereas the Ravens, Ray Rice had a fumble.
Gone.
It carries in the game.
What choice did they have?
Well, that's the cynical side. How many carries does Maurice have so far this year?
I'll have to pull it out, but he had 30 on 184, I think.
In that area,
184.
So 184 after seven. So let's just say he's at 200 at minimum after this week. That's only 16 more carries.
I'm sorry. 148.
Oh, 148. Okay, that makes me feel better.
148, 677, 4.6.
So 148 going into Houston, let's say, has 20 carries. That's 170.
Well, that's 21 carries a game.
Yeah, you're at 340 carries for the year if you average that out. And again, we didn't talk about it. The staff talked about how they wanted to limit that. So, you worry about end of the year.
What's the record for carries?
Larry Johnson had over 400.
So did Jamal Anderson at 477, yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite 500 carries.
What's he on pace now for? 340 plus?
340, is that what you said?
Yeah, 340 something. 340 and 350.
Yeah.
Quick math.
That's a lot of.
That doesn't include his touches out of the backfield either.
No. Which he ain't getting a lot of them out of the backfield anyway.
Yeah, he's got 159 touches.
So, you're looking high threes by the end of the year in touches.
The wordsmiths are over there using the computer.
to calculate.
I'm just wondering how many, the most rushing attempts in a season by a Jaguars running back is, because Fred didn't play that many full seasons.
And Jamal Anderson carried 410 was his high. That's
is that the record in the NFL?
Yeah, it's the NFL record.
Was say, yeah, 410. Huh?
How about this? The most rushing attempts by a Jaguar in a season is 345. Fred Taylor in 2003, when he had the 1,572 rushing yards, the most he ever had. The most by Maurice is 09. He had 312.
Well, he's on course to crush that.
Yeah, to beat his. Be right around Fred.
He has three games in his career with more than 30 carries. 2 years ago against St. Louis, here, Jaguars won the overtime game. Last year in Tennessee, where he had 31 carries as part of that 52-carry attempt, and then Monday night they're undefeated when he has 30 carries. But you just
and I know, John, you were kind of joking, but kind of not. What choice do you have?
Well, no, against the Ravens, I really wasn't.
What choice do you have against the Texans?
Right, they had no choice in that game. They had to do something to maintain possession. He was their best player.
But
so
in Houston, right. Where do you go for production right now if you're on offense?
Maurice.
Yeah, but you can't. I mean, there's only so far you can ride him.
Yep.
Keep on riding.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have choice. You know, you got to eventually put some on the young quarterback and the receivers. They have to all get better. But I mean, he's your workhorse.
And the concern is he's your workhorse, and we don't want to be the wet blanket after we just won a game, which is great. But he's your workhorse, and you're only averaging 12 points a game.
Short week after playing a physical defense like the Ravens. How much do you run him on Sunday in Houston? Do you pull back at all, knowing it's a short week?
I think you still got it. Your goal should be between 20 and 25 rushes or touches. And depending on how the game goes, that dictates where you go. But if you say we're going to limit his touches to 20, where do you get the other 20 or 25?
Yeah, without Rashad Jennings, you just can't.
I think you could have done that.
With Rashad.
Had Rashad been healthy.
But he's not.
Yeah.
Where do you go? I mean, I don't see them. Unless you're going to, obviously at Deji, do you run some one back with Montel that you've seen in the past? You get some one back with Greg? Where do you got to go somewhere else as the year goes on if you're concerned with these carries. Now, Maurice will tell you, because he's a competitor, I'm fine. I can go give me the ball 30 a game and I'll get it done.
Well, I thought Deji played better the other night.
He did. No, I'm not. This isn't a slide against anybody else. The reality is he's our guy. Mm-hmm. This is a team built around one guy on offense who can produce at an extremely high level.
All right, folks, we need a break. Our last of the evening. We'll come back and wrap up this program on Jaguars Radio. Hey, this is my impression logs. Just got a text message from Ryan Robinson, who tells me that Maurice Jones-Drew needs 61 yards to have the most by a running back in the first 8 games in a season in Jaguars history. No?
Ryan's a pro. He works. I know Jeff doesn't appreciate him, but I do.
Ryan obviously has his radio on. Nice stat, Ryan. Appreciate you. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Kevin's on the south side. Kevin, how are you?
Hello, fellas.
Hello.
I want to know what you think of the safety position this year. Dwight Lowry and DeJuan Landry.
I think DeJuan is playing pretty well. I think early in the season it was okay. I think really he had a phenomenal game against the Ravens. The one that really is just, come to the forefront and made you go, wow, has been Dwight Lowry. When you get a free safety that can really be aware, not make mistakes, make
covers
plays, covers a lot of ground, got the size, can tackle. Remember where this team was at the safety position? What, last year?
Oh.
Year before? Last year it was just
29th in the league in pass defense.
It was terrible last year. Courtney Green gave you some signs that he was going to be a good, strong safety, but,
Don Carey didn't give you a lot of hope.
Well, what a 180, and give Gene credit. He got, a guy in free agency that good, solid player.
And then stole Dwight Lowry.
How do the Jets give up Dwight Lowry
for nothing.
And honestly, how do Jaguars fans who are complaining right now about Gene, and that started to come out of the woodwork in the last week or two, how do they not see that move?
I don't know, but I mean, look at the Jet safeties now. I mean, they had the guy right in front of their face. I mean,
and he stole
him. You're telling me you can't tell, you know, seeing the guy for a couple years that he's a good player? And they're going to give him away? I mean, what do the Jets have? Jim Leonard and...
Jim Leonard's a good player.
I mean, he's a smart player.
He's a good player.
But, I mean, he's not a... Physically, he's not
He's a good
anything.
Player. He's a good
Who's
safety.
The other guy?
Kerry Rhodes?
No, Rhodes is in Arizona on IR. I don't even know who the other guy is. Yeah. That's how good he is.
But Jim Eric Leonard, Smith.
Eric Jim Smith. Leonard's very good.
He's good. But, I mean, Jim Leonard's a strong. You know, he's a box player.
I'm not saying I would have got rid of Dwight Lowry either. I'm just saying I wouldn't talk poorly. I don't think you have to make the case that Jim Leonard can't play why you keep Dwight Lowry. You keep Lowry because he's a good player.
His contract's up, too. You know, that's got to be a, I would think, a priority prior to the end of the year of getting him kind of locked in.
When do you have to have that done? Week 10? Is that when you have to have a new contract? For it to count against this year's cap?
It feels like it's always the first week of December.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It does. Week 10 seems a little bit early. Week 10 is the you got to report deadline. If you don't report, you don't get an accrued
season. For some reason, it's always the first week of December. It feels like those deals always kind of get done.
Well, look for some of those. I mean,
I don't know
Mike
the exact
Thomas
week or whatever it is.
Montel Owens got their deals done, and Dwight Lowry certainly earned the consideration for it.
Should we go around the league?
Yeah, I want to talk about some of these other games. Arizona-Baltimore doesn't do a lot for
me. I'll be there. Hey, come on.
That's the game you're doing?
Game, big game.
Well, at least you're in Baltimore. You're not having to go all the way to Arizona.
Good. It'll be good, good food.
The crab cakes.
I'm hungry.
Do they still do the crab cake? We haven't been there in a couple years.
Do they?
Oh. You can't have a game in Baltimore without eating crab
cakes. You got the crab cakes, baby.
Crab cake Saturday night, crab cake Sunday.
It is good. I'm going to a new restaurant. I'm looking forward to it.
You want to share it? Or?
I'll keep going.
All right.
I got it on here.
So getting past, let's see, you've got Miami and the Giants. New Orleans at St. Louis. Haven't heard it. Stop me. Here's a Division I, so we have to talk about it. Indianapolis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Do we have to?
No, we don't. Washington and Buffalo. I haven't found one yet that's, you know, really. Oh, there's one coming, though. There's one coming. Detroit and Denver.
Denver.
That's going to be a good game.
Here you go.
Ndamukong Suh versus Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
Let me say this, though. I think the Detroit Lions are way overrated. I would not be surprised if they don't make the playoffs. Would not surprise me. I've watched the San Francisco game on tape, and I did the game this weekend. They are awful.
I forgot you did the game.
They're awful on the offensive line. Terrible. Jeff Backus is done. He can't block anybody. The rest of their offensive line, Peterman, very average. Ryola is at okay center. Gosser Charles, the right tackle, average. With no Javi Best, you can try to take away Calvin. Stafford's good. And then on defense, Ndamukong Suh's a stud. Cliff Averill's very good pass rusher. Their front four is good. Their linebackers are average. Justin Durant starting. We didn't want him here.
Yeah.
And their secondary is not very good at all. That is a team that has a lot of holes.
All right, so here's a couple of other games, and then we'll get to the one that matters. Cincinnati's at Seattle. Cleveland's at San Francisco. Dallas at Philly is the Sunday night game.
Good game.
That's a good game. That will obviously be. San Diego, Kansas City will be more interesting based on what Kansas City did. But the game of the weekend is the Patriots at Pittsburgh.
When is that?
That is a 4:15 game.
What's the Sunday night game?
Sunday night game is Dallas-Philadelphia.
And what's the Monday night?
San Diego, Kansas City.
Good. That's be a good game Monday night.
New England and Pittsburgh, though.
I think New England beats them not easily, but you look at the last few games, New England, Pittsburgh, New England spreads them out, gets four or five wides, puts the game in Brady's hands, forces Pittsburgh to show their blitz front, what they want to do. They get some one-on-one coverages outside, and it's a 5 to 15-yard pass fest down the field.
Where's that game at?
In Pittsburgh. It doesn't matter where it is.
It
doesn't matter. If you go look at the recent history, and Brady just goes up and down the field, Pittsburgh tries to keep up for a while. By the end, they can't.
Well, and they're playing without James Harrison. That doesn't help.
But Brady's so good, and he's so good at getting the right play, and he's so good at getting the ball out of his hands, he forces them to declare what they want to do, and that's what happens when you spread them out like that. And so you can see what Troy Polamalu is coming from and what they want to do and coverage-wise, and then he just tears them apart.
You look like you're lost in thought.
I don't think Logman cares. You know what he's thinking about is food. And that restaurant I'm going to is the Ocean Air.
What was the name of that place we had crab cakes at?
I knew you were going to ask.
With Brother Love.
I remember you asking. It was Brother almost Love? A no-name place. Do you remember that? It was just.
You don't know Brother Love.
I don't. That's why
it was,
I asked.
It was in one of those brick row buildings over there
in the old part of town.
I don't remember there being a sign or a parking lot.
The pepper kind of flavored crab cakes.
Here's the thing. We get in there and
I'm going to eat a lot.
I'm there with Jeff, and Jeff's got his buddy Brother Love. And who, by the way,
that's my boy.
He is a tremendous character.
He'll appreciate this. All right, my boy Brother Love. You know, growing up, you know, we were somewhat wrestling fans. You remember the old WWF manager, Brother Love?
Yeah.
With red complexion.
Yeah,
we named him after that because he looks just like the guy.
Okay,
anyway,
good.
Brother Love. But here's the point. Loggy gets the menu and says, "Yeah, we'll have let's get four crab cake." And the guy goes, "Appetizer?" She goes, "No, no, no. We'll have four of the crab cake entrees as the appetizer.
And four of them, two of those.
It was the only time in my pro football experience where I have spent $200 on myself.
Well, there's one thing I'll say right before we go. There's nothing like going to eat dinner with Loggy on a Saturday night.
It's an experience. Yeah, it is awesome. It really is. That'll do it for the show. Oh, thanks for being here, buddy.
No problem, Ryan. Anytime.
Have a great night.